You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets. I am your new host, Jackson Gatlin. At JT Gatlin on Twitter, producer with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship here in Houston. As I speak to you late on this Tuesday evening, Russell Westbrook has officially played his first game as a Houston Rocket, a sentence nobody thought was possible until just a few short months ago. Now, before diving into the game recap and analyzing Russell Westbrook, I feel I would be doing everybody a disservice to not at least briefly touch base on the story that has been plaguing social media the last few days regarding the Rockets, Daryl Morey, a tweeted photo, Adam Silver. For those who may not be aware, on Sunday, a number of Chinese organizations opted to cut ties with the Rockets after Daryl Morey very briefly tweeted a photo in support of anti-government Hong Kong protesters. Right now, it is unknown if any of these severed ties are permanent. However, Adam Silver has issued a public statement that the NBA does not intend to discipline Daryl Morey in any way because Adam Silver and the NBA value the expression of free speech. This has massive ramifications for not just the Houston Rockets, but for the NBA as a whole. If China decides to cut ties with the NBA, that will affect the NBA's bottom dollar quite a bit. Now, this isn't a political podcast, but this does heavily involve the Houston Rockets. I mean, it was the Rockets GM who tweeted the photo. But I don't want to go into analyzing this any further, just simply presenting the facts. And as it stands right now, Daryl Morey isn't getting fired, but it seems that the NBA has decided to side with Morey, which is surprising, given the ramifications of how much money comes from the Chinese market. So I will say I'm impressed with Adam Silver's decision to stand by the freedom of speech of the NBA and its players and employees. But for now, we're going to table that discussion. Ben should be joining me a little bit later this week for a joint pod. I'm sure he will have some thoughts on the topic that we can explore together. But for right now, I want to focus on basketball. That's what this podcast is about. It's about the Houston Rockets. It's about the basketball team. And yes, the NBA has plenty of stories, plenty of narratives that include off-the-court topics. But as it stands, we're going to let this story develop. We're going to see where things go. And if needed, we will cover it further in the future. With all that said, let's talk some basketball. The Rockets were handed their first loss of the preseason at the hands of the Raptors, 134-129. Now, the Rockets didn't really lose this game because they were winning most of the way throughout. But come the fourth quarter, when most of the end-of-the-bench reserves were playing for both teams, the reserves for the Raptors edged out the win over the Rockets with a, 35-23 fourth quarter? Something along those lines. So they barely eked out the win. But it's preseason, so the win kind of doesn't matter. What does matter is what took place during the game and what we saw on the court. And what we saw on the court and what we're accustomed to seeing is effortless basketball by none other than James Harden. Harden had an insanely efficient evening, going for 34 points, a couple boards, 7 assists on 11 of 14 shooting, 4 of 7 behind the arc. He did have a few turnovers, grabbed a steal, got a block, all in about 27 minutes of play. Didn't even play the fourth quarter. Westbrook, in his first outing as a Houston Rocket, went for 13 points, couple rebounds as well, 6 assists on a slightly less efficient evening, just 4 of 10 shooting, 1 of 6 from behind the arc, which is painful to say out loud, 5 turnovers, a steal, a block, and about 20 minutes of action. Now, Westbrook hasn't played 5-on-5 ball for about 3 months, and it definitely looked like it. Westbrook was rusty. There's no other way to put it. He was out there, and it looked like he hadn't played basketball in a competitive fashion for about a few months. However, there were some bright spots, and we'll get to those in a little bit. Capella had a solid game, 12.6 boards. However, early in the third, he did re-aggravate his right thumb, the same thumb that sidelined him for about 5 weeks in the middle of last season. So that in and of itself is not great. One thing you don't ever want to see, period. Injuries, let's just face it, they suck. But you really don't want to see a player get injured in a preseason game because the stakes literally don't exist. Preseason does not matter. The win, the loss, it does not matter. Preseason simply exists for players to have a chance to either work themselves into game shape a little bit, kind of establish their new offensive sets, their new defensive schemes, whatever it may be. And to see a player, especially a starter, but any player, hurt themselves in a preseason game that might then impact their team, themselves, further down the line, it's disappointing. Even if the Rockets had come out with a win in this game, they still would have lost because Capella was injured. No word yet on the severity of the injury. I'm hopeful that it's not anything too serious. He did have surgery on that thumb already, which, as already stated, sidelined him for about 5 weeks last season. Honestly, you just hate to see any player get injured in preseason basketball, and I wish Capella a speedy recovery. Ideally, the Rockets want their full lineup come opening night. Daniel House was unavailable again after that leg cut that he suffered in practice. Eric Gordon had a strong outing, 12 points, all coming from behind the arc on 4 or 5 shooting. And he did have a surprising 4 assists. Eric Gordon, not really known for his passing ability, but he was definitely setting up his teammates earlier today. There was a concerning lack of defense from both teams on display. Honestly, defense was optional for the entirety of this game. But there were a few specific moments for both Westbrook and Anderson that were concerning. They were true defensive breakdowns where both Westbrook and Anderson just got lost. They switched to the wrong man, and those are the things that you iron out in preseason. You take care of those issues, you make sure everybody's on the same page as far as the defensive scheme, who goes where, who switches what man, and so hopefully we don't see those problems come opening night. Before we get into the good and the bad of Westbrook's first outing as a Houston Rocket, a quick message from our friends at Indochino. Indochino is the world's largest made-to-measure menswear brand. Start your style upgrade now with $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com when entering code LOCKEDON at checkout. Again, that is Indochino.com with code LOCKEDON at checkout. Now, Westbrook's first outing with the Rockets was a bit of a mixed bag. Just to recap his stat line, he had 13 points, 2 boards, 6 assists on pretty poor shooting, 4 of 10 from the field, 1 of 6 from behind the arc, 5 turnovers. That number definitely stands out. A steal, a block, and about 20 minutes of action. The areas that really stood out to me in Westbrook's first outing with the Rockets were his chemistry with Capella, his shot selection, his ability to actually be effective off the ball in a different sense than we're used to as far as an off-the-ball player is normally thought of, and his ability to really push the ball in transition. So we'll just roll down that list in order here, starting with his apparent chemistry with Clint Capella. A chemistry that Chris Paul, in 2 years, never really established here in Houston, and I'm pretty sure I know why. The reason Clint Capela and James Harden work so well together is because in Mike D'Antoni's system of ball handlers, wings, and rim runners, the ball handler has to be a threat to score all the time. It's an absolute must in this system. And James Harden is a threat to score the moment he laces him up. The moment James Harden is on the court, he is a threat to score the ball. And Westbrook is the same way. Chris Paul, regrettably, that second year here in Houston, lost a lot of his ability to get his own shot off, to get separation from his defender, and to be a threat to score the basketball. Westbrook does not have any of those issues. Westbrook can get to the rim, maybe not at will, but it's pretty easy for Westbrook to blow by his defender and to keep pressure on the defense and to keep defenders focused on him so that the rim runner, in this case Capela, has a clean lane to the basket. And that was definitely evident earlier today. I want to say Westbrook connected on 3 or 4 of his 6 assists with Capela, which is a promising sign for games to come. Because if you've got James Harden connecting with Capela and Russell Westbrook connecting with Capela, Capela might very well average 20-10 this season, getting fed from two of the best pick and roll players, probably the best 2 pick and roll players in the league. So his chemistry there is definitely a positive sign, and it's only going to grow as they play more and more together, as they get more minutes, as they get more time spent together on the court. Westbrook will slowly realize where Capela's favorite spots are, exactly where he likes the ball. All these little things that build up over time, the things that Harden and Capela have worked on together for years, it seemed that Westbrook and Capela just had this natural connection. And a lot of that probably stems from the fact that Russell Westbrook, coming from OKC, had Steven Adams, kind of a bigger, stronger, less athletic version of Clint Capela, and probably a version of Clint Capela that doesn't quite have the hands that Capela does have. I think that's something that Westbrook is going to learn to appreciate greatly, is the fact that he doesn't have to throw a perfect pass to Capela for Capela to finish it. Capela has great hands for a big. There are so many passes that Capela catches. James Harden had, 1, no business throwing, and 2, Capela had no business finishing, and yet he still does. Whether it's just tipping in a slightly off pass or catching a ball on the way up and not quite being able to slam it home so he lands and then throws in a reverse layup effortlessly on the other side, Capela has great hands for a big. And James Harden has a great deal of confidence in his ability to finish around the rim, and it looks like Westbrook already shares that same level of confidence. He was looking for Capela left and right in today's game, and he found him on more than one occasion. So that chemistry is going to grow, and that is going to be a dynamic duo on the court when Harden is sitting. It wasn't all great, though. Westbrook shot 6 times from beyond the arc and only hit 1 of them. Not only that, his first made bucket as a Houston Rocket, a mid-range jumper. I don't know about you, but I'm pretty sure that Daryl Morey did not give Russell Westbrook the same hall pass that Chris Paul got as far as mid-range jumpers are concerned. So that is, by my count, 7 shots that Russell Westbrook had no business taking, because on all 6 of his 3-point attempts, he was not wide open. I know that on 2 or 3 of them, he just walked it up the court and jacked up a 3 immediately. Now, whether it's James Harden or Mike D'Antoni or Daryl Morey or, hell, the entire team, whoever it needs to be to sit down with Westbrook and say, look, man, we don't need you shooting 6 threes a game. That is not what you're good at. I would be ecstatic to see a stat line where Westbrook doesn't attempt a single 3-pointer. Do I think that'll ever happen? It might a few times. But I'm really concerned about his shot selection. And I'm really concerned that he's not going to break his old habits of chucking threes. If he can break that habit, and if he can focus on what he is good at, which is getting to the rim and setting up his teammates, this can work. the Russell Westbrook experiment can work, but it won't work if he's walking it up the court and jacking up a three within 4 or 5 seconds of the shot clock and bricking it. Now, what did work with Russell Westbrook was him moving off the ball. There were a couple points last night where Westbrook was sitting in the corner, ready to catch and shoot a three if needed. But as the play developed, whether it was with Harden or Eric Gordon, Westbrook slashed in towards the basket, and he definitely got one as an assist from Harden where he got the pass dropped off to him, couldn't complete it right then and there, but took the ball back out, kind of got to attack an already scrambling defense and got an easy two. So situations like that where Westbrook is moving off the ball as a slasher can be beneficial, but he has to buy into that. Westbrook has to buy into the fact that he is not a shooter. And that might be kind of a monumental thing to ask of him, to say, hey, you just need to not shoot the ball from beyond that three-point line. If you do, you're going to be in trouble. And something that I don't think anybody was worried about was his transition game. Westbrook looked amazing in transition. He is so ridiculously fast, it's insane. The pace of the game just absolutely skyrocketed when James Harden sat down and it was the Russell Westbrook show. Now, he was a bit sloppy in transition at times. That's where, you know, some of those 5 turnovers came from. But I attribute most of that to rust. Granted, James Harden, Westbrook, LeBron James, those high usage type players that are constantly the focal point of the offense for their teams, they will generate more turnovers than a regular player will. So that just kind of comes with the job description. But the 5 turnovers last night, I attribute more to rust than to Westbrook just being the guy or having to facilitate. Didn't play 5-on-5 for a handful of months. Comes back into a preseason game, brand new environment. Those 5 turnovers aren't going to be a regular thing, but he looked good in transition. In this final segment, just want to go over some general roster thoughts, touch base on what I believe is going to be the final 15-man roster, what my expectations are for as far as minutes distribution goes, what some of the lineups that D'Antoni's going to use will look like, things of that nature. As it stands, this team is so much more deep than last year's team. I mean, when you look at guys at the start of the season last year, guys like James Ennis and Carmelo Anthony, who were expected to be role players and contributors on a championship team, and then you look at this team and one, how deep it is that you've got guys legitimately competing for roster spots 13 through 15, as well as just the quality of guys that you've got. Guys like Thabo Sefolosha, Tyson Chandler, guys who understand the attitude it takes to win and who understand how to lead by example and how to lead in a veteran sense without even having to play. Those are guys who are going to be in the locker room and who are going to be vocal and who provide good team chemistry and do so many things that aren't directly quantifiable on the court, but that provide such an impact to a team that wants to win a championship. You can't win a championship without guys like that. So as far as the roster stands, I think it's safe to say that the starting lineup is going to be Westbrook, Harden, Gordon, Tucker, and Capella. That's easy. Some people were probably hoping Daniel House would snag that starting small forward role and that Eric Gordon would go back to being that spark plug sixth man off the bench. But Mike D'Antoni has said that for now, Eric Gordon is going to be his starter at the three spot and Daniel House will be coming off the bench. That may very well change as the season progresses. It may become apparent that it's needed to have the athleticism and the height of Daniel House in the starting lineup, or maybe the bench production is just not quite where Mike D'Antoni wants it, so he decides to shift Eric Gordon down to the bench role, which he has done before and done well. I mean, there's a reason he's a previous Sixth Man of the Year award winner, right? So the starting lineup is pretty much locked in stone. You've got your guys 6, 7, and 8 who are coming off the bench will more than likely be Rivers, House, and Gerald Green. The backup center spot is very clearly defined with Tyson Chandler and Nene. Those two guys are not going anywhere, so you're already up to 10 spots. Ryan Anderson is going to make the cut. I think there's a reason that the Rockets felt comfortable giving him a larger guarantee than any of the other training camp invitees. That's because they felt like he was going to make it. Ryan gets along great with the other guys. He's got a great chemistry with the team. I remember asking PJ Tucker about Ryan Anderson at Media Day, and PJ just cracked a big smile. You know, he goes, "We love Rhino." You know, having that type of chemistry already established is so crucial. And not just that, but the skill set that Ryan Anderson provides. You know, he provides a little bit more size, something that the Rockets are distinctly lacking at that four spot. You know, he stands at about 6'10", quite a bit bigger than PJ Tucker. Obviously not anywhere near the defender that Tucker is, but his skill set on the offensive side of the ball, being able to stretch the floor and provide another shooter like Eric Gordon, who not only shoots the three ball well, but can also shoot the three ball well from a few steps behind the arc. There's something to be said for that level of shooting and how it opens up the paint even more so than traditional three-point shooters who stand right on top of the line. When you've got a guy standing 2, 3, 4 feet away from the three-point line and forcing defenders to really commit to him that far away, it just opens things up offensively. So I don't think there's any question about it. Ryan Anderson has a spot on this team. There's also the Anthony Bennett situation. Obviously, it's regrettable that he didn't get a chance to showcase his talents, to showcase his shooting that he's worked so hard on in the G League. But as it stands right now, there is no competition. Bennett's just not going to make the cut. Then you're on to guys like Chris Clemens and Ben McLemore, Blossom Game, Clark, Hartenstein, really the kind of end of the bench type guys. I think Chris Clemens has definitely played himself into a roster spot. It still remains to be seen, is that roster spot going to be on a two-way contract, or will the Rockets somehow make space so that they can sign him to a regular NBA deal and go ahead and get him locked down, just like they did with Gary Clark and Isaiah Hartenstein? And the ironic thing is, I can totally see them waiving Isaiah Hartenstein to create space for Chris Clemens if they decide to go that route. Because if you put him on a two-way contract, you risk dealing with not being able to lock him down the same way that the Rockets dealt with not being able to lock down Daniel House last season. Now, Chris Clemens probably won't be in a role that is contributing right away like Daniel House was, especially with the guard depth that this team does have. But Isaiah Hartenstein just doesn't provide much to this team. A team that has a center trio of Capella, Chandler, and Nene, as well as Ryan Anderson, who's capable of playing a stretch five role, and PJ Tucker, who plays the five spot in the Tuck Wagon lineup. There are so many guys that can get minutes ahead of Isaiah Hartenstein, and when you really look at it, who is going to be more beneficial in the long term, Isaiah Hartenstein or Chris Clemens? So I can easily see the Rockets waving Hartenstein to create that 15th roster spot to go ahead and lock down Chris Clemens. Ben McLemore, I think, does get another roster spot as well. McLemore has shown that he can be a guy who can simply just come off the bench and be told, hey, go stand in that spot, be ready to catch the ball, and be ready to hit some threes. And that is a premium on a roster like this that prioritizes three-point shooting as much as it does. Maybe there's a night where Gerald Green just doesn't have it. Maybe Austin Rivers is 0-for-5. You know, you just got to be able to put somebody in and say, hey, go get us some buckets. And it looks like McLemore can be that type of player for this team. You throw him into a lineup with Harden and Westbrook and tell him to go sit on the three-point line and wait for his open shot because he's definitely going to get him. Also Gary Clark. And then you've obviously got Cephalosha in there. And that's your 15 man right there. Westbrook, Rivers, Clemens, Harden, Green, McLemore, Gordon, House, and Cephalosha, Tucker, Anderson, and Gary Clark, Capella, Chandler, and Nene. That is a 15-man roster that you can go to war with. That's where we'll go ahead and cut things this Tuesday, October 8th. Thank you for tuning in. Now, if you want more content before our next show, social media is where everything's happening. I'm on there at JT Gatlin. Ben DuBose is on there at Ben DuBose, and the show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Past that, there's Facebook, which is located at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, the website, LockedOnRockets.com, and email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All of these are different avenues to consume content about the Rockets or ask me and Ben questions about the team or make suggestions for the show, place advertising inquiries, anything we can do to improve the experience for you, the listener. Beyond that, if you would be kind enough to subscribe and rate the show on Apple, Google, Spotify, Himalaya, wherever it may be that you listen to your podcasts, please subscribe and give us a 5-star review. That's how you get the benefits of episodes straight to your inbox before it's published to the previously mentioned social media outlets. And we get the benefit of looking attractive to potential advertisers and keeping the business model rolling along as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. For this Tuesday, October 8th, this is where we break. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope to have you back again soon, right here at Locked On Rockets, your podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.